Beloved MTV VJ, music exec, and radio personality Matt Pinfield has spent almost four decades in front of and behind the mic. He signed bands, interviewed Beatles, and had songs written about him. But now, he's having a different conversation. He's talking with friends and supporters across the entertainment industry about their journey and how he's found his voice again, being open about his recovery. This is Sound, Sobriety, and Success.
Hey, everybody. My guest today is a leading comedian, actor, producer who's performed regularly at the Comedy Store, improv comedy clubs all over the country, and countless other venues sharing the stage with the likes of Bill Burr, Kevin Nealon, the late, great Bob Saget, Jay Moore, and most commonly out on the road with SNL legendary player Daryl Hammond. And he's achieved critical acclaim as the host of the inspirational podcast Second Chances, which we'll talk about later. But I'm so happy to have him here. He's a great friend and a big part of my recovery. Welcome to Sound, Sobriety, and Success. It's Greg Baldwin. Greg, good to see you, buddy.
Oh, man, it's great to be here, man. You're such a great friend.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I know you as just, you know, my friend Matt Pinfield, but, you know, I grew up watching MTV, so it's pretty cool to be, after all these years of knowing who you are, to be interviewed by, you know, you're such a legendary interviewer.
Well, you know, it's really funny. We were at a meeting once, and you know, you were speaking, and yeah. I walked up to you and I said, I asked you, I go, man, you were so funny. Cause you know, we always want to, you know, make people realize that it's not all doom and gloom being in recovery. There's a lot, you have more fun than ever. And, you know, it's really up to you. And there are meetings that are really, you know, inspirational and entertaining. Mm-hmm. And your story was unbelievable. I mean, you just, so I walked up to you. I said, what did I say? I said, I'm Matt Pinfield. And yeah, you go, yeah. I know that.
You're like, I'm Matt Pinfield. I'm like, I know who you are, man.
Yeah. And I said, are you in comedy? And you said, yes. I go, because it was incredible when you qualified and shared your story.
Thank you, brother.
You know, we were just talking recently about, like, you know, TV shows we love, and you and I both love Ted Lasso.
Yeah.
And you just got to go hang out with this event with the cast at the Grammy Museum.
Yep.
And I saw Juno Temple. Me and my girlfriend Carol were leaving Chateau Marmont the other night. We were having dinner with a friend, and she was outside. And I love that show and that cast. We both agree how good that is.
I love that show so much because at the time of the pandemic, when I started watching it, we needed some positivity. And it's like Ted Lasso, the lead character, every time like something happens to him, you'd want him to be like, you know what? Get all pissed and create hell. And he'd always just kill everybody with kindness and positivity. And I just loved that.
Yeah, that's what I loved about it too. You know, and you told me that you met everybody. I think Brett Goldstein wasn't there, but the guy who plays Jamie Tartt.
Yep.
And the rest of who was there?
Yeah, so what happened was my friend Paul Costable is a host. And he asked me, we do a bunch of videos together. We're both comedians. And he asked me, he goes, hey, I'm hosting this event at the Grammy Museum. And he said there's the second coach was going to be there. And it was about the song, one of the songs in the show. I'm like, and I thought to myself, oh God, I don't really want to go, but I'll go. So I went, and then I ended up sitting in like this little VIP section. And then the whole cast, Jason Sudeikis and Juno Temple, and everybody came and sat down there. And then the guy that plays the writer joined the show, you know, Trent. He sat next to me and we were chatting and stuff. And then what happened, a little girl came and there wasn't a seat for her. So Jason Sudeikis got up, who plays Ted Lasso, got up and gave her his seat and went and stood. I'm like, no, man, you can take my seat. And then I ended up staying in the whole show. And then we ended up talking after. And then we went to the little VIP backstage and I got to meet a lot of the cast and stuff and talked to Jamie Tartt. It was just cool. Of all the cast that I'd want to meet, it would be them because I love the positivity of that show so much.
So do I, and I'm sad it's over after three seasons.
I know, it's so good.
Yeah, it was such a great show. Hey, Greg, talk to me about you growing up in the Bay Area because, you know, I was there on the radio for two. I'm still on the radio there on KSAN on the Bone. Mm-hmm. My syndicated show Flashback airs there every Sunday morning. In fact, I was down in Irvine at my friend's who has this. You know, he lives where there's this gigantic university-sized gym. And when I go and visit him, my girlfriend and I went and stayed with him, I'll go do the treadmill and listen to at least the last hour of the show because it starts at 6 in the morning. So if I get into the treadmill at 9, at least I get to hear some of my show there. And then I was on KFOG for a while.
Yeah.
But you started in San Francisco radio And I want you to tell everybody about that because it's interesting when we found out we had mutual friends.
Yep.
But more importantly, talk to me about how you got into radio sales and you were doing that for a while.
Yeah, so music has been my passion since I was a little kid, man. And I remember when I was a little kid and it was Eric Clapton, Lay Down Sally.
Yeah.
And we had a little 45. And I remember I put the 45 on and I was dancing to it on the bed. And I just loved music. I went to my first concert was Black Sabbath.
Yeah.
Mob Rules tour. And then I went to Day on the Green when I was 14 with Loverboy and Scorpions and Iron Maiden and Foreigner were the four bands. And I just loved music. And when I was a little kid, I loved this station called KOME and KRQR. And so when I graduated college, I was actually in Sonoma State. And my friend, this guy Tracy, was on KMEL. He came up to do like a remote. And I asked him about jobs and radio, and he said, man, you got to be on the business side, you know, be an account executive. They make tons of money. They get all the perks. They get a lot of perks. So I'm like, I went to my teacher, and I said, I want to become an account executive for radio. And she said, Greg, you know, I did that for, 20 years in San Francisco. So she took me under her wing, and I just studied it. I learned it. I learned all the things. So by the time I got an interview with KOME, my favorite station growing up, I was ready, and I walked into the interview, and I see a baseball on the desk, and I was a college baseball player, and I'm like, oh, I got this, right? Because I knew that he liked baseball, and we just started talking baseball, and I had learned all the terms and knowledge, and they hired me, and it was just incredible.
Yeah, and you worked at great stations, which you still do. It's what you worked for Alice, and now you go on there as a guest on their morning show because of your comedy.
Yeah.
And Live 105, the legendary alternative station up there, all part of the CBS radio thing.
Yeah, I started working for KOME, which my first job was selling Howard Stern advertising and alternative rock music. And then they sold KOME, and I moved up to KCBS and sold for KCBS Live 105 and Alice.
Yeah. And that's great, though.
Yeah.
It's a great experience to know that. You and I both, I mean, obviously, I started experimenting with drugs and alcohol at a very young age. So tell me about that for you. I mean, what was the gateway, the beginning of that?
I remember the first time I smoked pot, it was in a windmill, and I was probably around third grade. And I don't remember getting high off it, but I remember the first time this guy got me stoned. And I remember this chair I was sitting in, and I remember how it made me feel. And it was just incredible. And then I remember going to the dentist when I was a little kid, and they gave me laughing gas. And I fell off into this dream that I was on a Viking's helmet with the horn sticking out, and he's running down some stairs. And then at one point, it felt like I was on my head, and my feet were straight in the air, and my body was tingly. And I remember coming out of it, and I can hear the dentist saying, open your mouth, open your mouth, open your mouth, open your mouth. And I just remember going, oh, my God. And the nitrous wore off, and I was like, what was that? It was like Disneyland times 100. And I'm like, I know exactly what I want to do for the rest of my life. Yeah. I want to sit in this dentist chair and get my teeth drilled on because it felt so good, And of course, I had a lot of dental problems, and I would choose my dentist by the amount of nitrous they would give me. And but there was just something different, When I just loved the way drugs and alcohol made me feel, and I think I have something different in my mind, in my brain, that normal people don't have. If something makes me feel good or gives me pleasure, I want more of it. And I abuse it until it doesn't work anymore. And then I go on to something else, But it's always been a huge part of my life since I first started experimenting.
Yeah, I mean, we have that addictive personality, certainly. Yeah. I was the same way, I didn't do anything halfway.
Yeah.
Which in turn, when we do get clean and sober, they tell us, half measures avail us nothing.
Yeah.
So we have to approach that with the same amount of passion and vigor that we put into, getting high and drinking. And certainly at first you're like, wait a minute, I don't know if this is for me. And then realize that it was the best decision we ever made,
When I first got hired by KOME, I hadn't sold anything. And I went to Camp KOME, was the station, music show, and I think Green Day, a bunch of big bands are playing, And I had just started like a couple weeks ago, and I had backstage passes, and I got really drunk, like really drunk. And they kicked me out of the backstage, and I tried to get back in to get my bag. And I got in an argument with the bouncer, the security guard. Robin Rockwell, who was the marketing director at the station at the time, came walking out with my bag, grabbed my backstage pass, gave me my bag, and said, go home. And the next day I showed up to work, and I was like, oh my God, I lost my career, you know? And I was so hungover, and I'm like, it just started in radio, and I already ruined it. And the general manager came up to my desk, and I'm like, oh, I'm getting fired. And he goes, hey man, he goes, I heard you're swinging from the chandeliers. And I'm like, yeah, I'm so sorry. And he said, don't do it again. And I didn't get fired. But, you know, there were consequences. There were always these little problems, but I was always able to get away with it. But that was my beginning of my radio career. It almost ended before it started because of my alcohol abuse.
I mean, I know that feeling. You know, I mean, my thing was I certainly couldn't predict how alcohol was going to react with me. You know, you might have 4 or 5 really great nights, everything's fine, and then you get blackout drunk. And listen, I mean, and you know this, you know, I had jobs where I was suspended, then fired, rehired, and went through so much change and put my employers through a lot over the years. You know, for everything good that I did, I also became a liability at certain times, and it wasn't like they wanted to kick me to the curb by any means, but... Yeah. They felt like they had no choice, and there's consequences in that. You know what I mean?
I could tell you what saved you.
What?
It's because you're a good human being, and people root for you. You have a good heart. I know you very well. You're one of my closest friends. You just have a solid heart. So, and I'm the same way. People always want to root for us, and we're not bad people. We just have an addiction, and so of course you bounced back when you got sober, you know, and I did the same.
Yeah, and I'm so grateful for that. I got to say, it's amazing. So it's as we know, we both been through situations where it got bad, you know, where missing work, not showing up on time, you know, all that other stuff, or showing up loaded or high. Let's talk about even though I never necessarily went on I definitely didn't go on TV high or drunk.
Yeah.
Maybe hung, but definitely hung over. You know, hung over from alcohol or drugs. Just kind of like, you know what they say. Sometimes it's amazing how you realize once you have focus how much better your work is. Greg, tell me about one of the craziest experiences.
Oh, boy. Because
this one, I mean, you know, it's...
All right, I got a good one. It involves radio. So I started doing meth, and my life was spiraling out of control, and I was supposed to go to work at K-Rock, and so I was supposed to transfer down to K-Rock, and so I left KCBS, and I moved down to LA. I interviewed with K-Rock. It didn't work out, but, I was on meth, and so I got an interview with a radio station, KABC, and I had a bag of meth in my pocket, in my suit pocket, so I go interview with the GSM or GM. And I think I have a really good resume, so I think I killed the interview, right? Well, we're walking out, and there was a hole in my pocket, and the bag of meth fell out my pant leg onto the floor in the general manager's office at KABC. He looks down, he grabs it, he holds it up, and he's like, "What's this?" And I snatched it out of his hand, and I said, "Vitamins." And he's like, okay, let me escort you to the door. And he walked me out. And I remember walking out of there and we laugh about it now. And it's funny because I tell addicts this story and they crack up. I tell normal people and they're like, oh my God. But I remember that devastation. And I wish I could find him now. I wish I could find him.
Show how great you're doing.
Yeah. And he had enough courtesy to send me a follow-up email saying they weren't gonna pursue my employment at KBC, but just devastation, you know, and just devastation. And listen, I was a good kid growing up, man. I played baseball, I had feathered hair, I was a cute kid. I had all the dreams and aspirations to do great things. Never in a million years did I ever anticipate that I would be a drug addict. And you know, I got down to 118 pounds. I was missing a few teeth. I lost my career in radio. I've spent all my money. I crashed my car, lost my driver's license. I was dying, you know, I was just literally dying. And, It was just so devastating. And my poor mom, which is my parents, everything I put them through. And it's like, it was just brutal, you know?
Yeah.
And, but you know, I'll tell you, I got arrested for possession of meth. I ended up going back into work for a radio station, K-Fox, and Justin Whitmire was the GM at the time. And he was my friend. We started our career together and he was trying to help me get me rehab and all this stuff. And I lost my ability to function in society. And I just couldn't do it. And and I lost everything. And I ended up living out of my car. He had to let me go. And I got arrested for meth possession. And the judge gave me the option of rehab or jail. And I really, honestly, was going to choose the jail because I didn't think I could get clean. And I chose rehab. And I checked myself in on February 13th of 2007. And so my sobriety date is Valentine's Day of 2007. So. Nothing says you're a loser like getting sober on Valentine's Day, huh?
Not necessarily. I think that's funny when you do it. It's part of your, you know, you're very honest in your comedy routines, which are great. When I get to see you do comedy, it's amazing because you have incredible true stories and the way that you're able to mm-hmm. spin those stories. Not only when you're helping other addicts and alcoholics, you know, who always are moved by your speaking, but I mean, you know, the stories are funny. Like one of my favorites is, you know, because... One of my favorite stories is the one where you're dating the female dentist.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course, your teeth are messed up after the meth. And she goes, oh, my gosh. She, like, was excited to date you because she wanted to fix your teeth. Yeah. I mean, it's just these incredible stories that are so good, man, you know. And it's part of your comedy, which is so great, which is why I love to see you perform, you know. But you also were such an incredible part of my sobriety because – I went out again and relapsed after I met you. I mean, we were hanging out, but then during the pandemic, you know, we stayed close. Obviously, many people were going to meetings on Zoom. We had a few, we had a small group of guys, you and me and another comedian and a
Daryl.
And Daryl and a Hollywood fashion designer who does, everything for Hollywood, major Oscar and you know, award nominated. And she was with us. And it was like we would be at social distancing, you know, in a yard.
Yeah.
That was the good thing about being in Los Angeles. It was like, you know, the weather wasn't horrible. So, you know, bring a lawn chair and, you know, sit 6 feet from each other. But, you know, we found a way to have meetings.
Yeah.
And I think that that was the thing that was so cool. I loved that about it. And, man, I'm just so grateful to my higher power and to all my friends like yourself. For that, as I'm here now, you know, 3 years and 2 months. It's unbelievable.
That's incredible, man.
You know?
It's a great life.
Yeah, it's an incredible life. Greg, it's amazing. So you turned this around, and comedy you loved. So it was always something that you wanted to do, and you're so naturally great at it. Can we talk about how that started?
Yeah.
And you know, because I just love what you've done.
So I was a theater actor. So I was on the sales side in radio, but I was always enamored with the programming side. I always wanted to be the talent, you know? And when I was a little kid, I was in Julius Caesar. When I was a little kid, I always wanted to be an actor or on the, you know, and I just loved the showmanship and, you know, I loved, you know, like I played baseball. I loved to pitch and be the center of it. I just loved to perform. And I started acting in San Francisco. I became a member of the Actors Theater, and I did a lot of plays and stuff. But I was down in L.A. I actually moved to L.A. I was going to go. I wanted to follow my dreams to be an actor. But I used to go to the Comedy Store by myself, and I would watch comedians. But it never crossed my mind to do comedy because I didn't think I was funny or I could write comedy. It never crossed my mind, right? So I was at a recovery meeting, and my friend introduced me to this newcomer. And he said, he goes, will you give him a ride home after the meeting? And I thought to myself, I'm like, why don't you give him a ride home? You got a car. Why are you asking me? But I've learned in recovery that, you know, to say yes to life.
Yeah.
So I said, sure. So I gave him this guy a ride home, and he had no money. So I'm like, do you have groceries? And he's like, no. And so I'm like, all right, I'll take you grocery shopping. And I'm like, where do you shop? And this dude took me to Whole Foods.
it's like, I love that. It's like, you know, there have been times I tried to ham sandwiches to the homeless in their here in Los Angeles, and they go, I don't like chicken salad on rye. You know? I'm like, okay. Yeah, just trying to make sure you eat.
I'm like, dude, you were broke and homeless a couple months ago, and now all of a sudden you only eat organic. You're gluten free.
Whoa! I'll buy you fruit groceries. Yeah. Maybe it's a little better if it's a regular.
But listen, I did my job, and we became friends. It turns out he was a stand up comedian. He invited me to this show, and at the Comedy Store, and it was like a beginner show, and all the comedians were just terrible. And I do a lot of public speaking or speaking in the jails and prisons about recovery. And I have a couple of drug stories that make people laugh. And I'm like, dude, I could tell drug stories and be as funny as half of these guys, just joking. And he goes, you want to try it? And I was like, oh my God. But listen, I say yes to life. And I said, sure, I'll try it. And he put me up at this beginner show a week later. And I went and I told some recovery stories and some drug stories, and I wrapped it up with a recovery message. And the host comes back up. People high five me when I come off the stage. The host comes back up and he's like, holy smokes, man. I didn't know this was an AA meeting. And everybody started laughing. And that was on September 12th of 2013. And I've been grinding away ever since that point. And, I tour the country now with, guys I grew up watching on TV, Daryl Hammond and Jay Moore. I tour the country with. I'm doing a great show with those guys. But I was doing a show a few years ago at the most famous comedy club in the world, and it's the Comedy Store. And I'm behind the curtain. I'm hosting the show, and I'm talking to Bill Burr, right? One of the biggest comedians in the country. And I'm about to go on stage, and I'm about to introduce him. And I just got overwhelmed. And, the same comedy stage as Murphy and Pryor and Letterman and all the greats have walked out this curtain, and I'm talking to Bill Burr, and I just thought to myself, like, how did this happen? How
it happened? Because you got clean and sober.
I gave a newcomer a ride home. Yeah, that's how it happened.
That being of service thing.
It's the being of service, And Danny Trejo has a great. I love his. He's one. He does some public speaking. I heard him say one time. I think it was on TV or something. He said, everything good in my life has come as a direct result of helping another human being.
Yeah. Which is, it's all about being of service.
Yeah. And it's like, what if I was selfish and self-centered that day and I said no to giving that newcomer a ride home? My whole life changed from giving this guy a ride home.
Yeah. It really did. And it's amazing. Yeah. And look at you now. You're touring the country and doing so much. And it's beautiful because it's a dream that you've followed. And, there's just so many cool things like being on the road. I've seen you on the road, you and Daryl, and I know Daryl and Jay are just such great guys. You've done a lot of shows with so many people. And tell me about when you did with Bob Saget.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Great Bob Saget.
Oh, man, I have a great Bob Saget story. So I was in San Francisco. I was working, he came in to do an interview at Alice Radio. I met him before the morning show, and my friend Matt, who was producing the Sarah Vinny show, Maddie, asked me if I wanted to go see Bob Saget that night, right? So I'm like, sure. So we go see Bob Saget perform. And after the show, Bob's, we're going to give him a ride home to his hotel. So we're coming to my car, and he's like, hey, he goes, hey, let me drive your car. I go, what? And he goes, let me drive your car. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And he goes, listen, you're hammered, dude. He goes, I got kids, man. Just let me drive your car. And I'm like, come on, dude. I'm sober. I'm totally sober. I had two beers. And he's like, come on, dude. Let me drive. And I'm like, no, you're not driving my car, Bob. And we're just laughing about it, right? So he gets in my car. He's sitting shotgun. So we're driving in San Francisco, and I took a turn down a one-way street the wrong way with oncoming traffic coming at us. And he's like, oh, see, man, I told you. God damn it. And, and it was a blast. We ended up going out and having pizza and drinking, and drinks with Bob and stuff. I hadn't got sober yet, but we had just had a blast till like 3 a.m. with Bob Saget, right? So fast forward till 5 years ago, when Bob was still with us. I'm doing a show with Bob Saget at the Comedy Store, right? Oh, by the way, after that night we partied with Bob Saget, Jamie Kennedy came out with a video chilling with Saget, right? Yeah. And it was the whole video was about a night on the town with Bob Saget. And I'm like, I lived that life, dude. I lived that night with Bob Saget, dude, so right? Great.
Yeah.
And, but it turns out everybody has a Bob Saget story. But anyway, I'm doing a show with Jamie Kennedy and Bob Saget at the Comedy Store.
Yeah.
And so we're in the green room, and I'm with Bob Saget and Jamie Kennedy, and I told the story. Bob Saget had no idea, did not remember the night whatsoever. But I told the story and I'm like, I lived that video you guys made with you, Bob. And it was just such a surreal moment. And, it was so cool. And God, he was such a good dude, man. It's so, it's so sad he's gone. But I do shows with Jamie Kennedy all the time now.
Yeah, and Eliza Schlesinger and all these other people. There's so many. I've seen you perform with so many.
Yeah.
And so many amazing bills, you know what I mean? Because you just do it, which is great. One of my other favorite stories, too, is how you became like an acting coach for Joe Magnarella, who's, our friend. And, he's amazing. Of course, he's married to
Sofia Vergara.
Yeah, right. And But he's just a great dude. And he had to do this role. You got to tell this story because it's genius. Because, of course, we're ex-drug guys, and this story about, you being his coach in a certain way is very interesting. So I want people to hear it.
But Joe calls me up. I'm friends with him, and he says, "Hey, man," he goes, "I'm shooting this movie." He goes, "In the movie, I use crystal meth." And he's like, I've never done it before, and I know you used to have a problem with it. He's like, "You think you'd come on set and work with me on that?" And I'm like, sure, right? Of course. So I go on set, and in the scene he snorts some meth and he kills all these drug dealers, right? And
because he's playing like this kind of anti-hero superhero, right?
So he's playing a superhero from another planet, but on Earth he doesn't have any powers, right?
Yeah.
I do a comedy thing about it, and I said, he only has powers unless he snorts crystal meth.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what is this, a porno, Joe?
Yeah, exactly.
That's not true, but anyway, he does meth, he does drugs, and so I go on set with him, and he's in like a superhero outfit, and he snorts this meth, and he kills all these drug dealers. But I helped him, understand the feeling that meth gets with you, and I walked him through it and stuff. But the director yells cut. Joe walks right over to me, and he's like, "How was that, man?" Right next to the director. And I'm like, "That was great, Joe. That was awesome, man. That was awesome." But the joke is, I was like, "You know what? I need more energy. I need more paranoia. And peep out the window a couple times."
Yeah.
Which is great. And he actually went on the Conan O'Brien show, and he told the story how he had to hire a meth coach.
Yeah.
Which was me. I'm the very first meth coach in the history of the world.
In Hollywood. I think is so funny. And then you went to the premiere with him. And at that point, it was during the pandemic. So the premieres were like at the drive-ins. But you went as his guest to that, which was cool.
It was crazy because I was sitting in we're sitting in his SUV, and I'm eating pizza with Joe, and we're watching Joe on the big screen snorting meth that I coached him how to do. I'm like, this is freaking weird, man. And I actually got a credit. The movie's called Arch Enemy, and in the credits, if you pause it and go as slow as you possibly can, you'll see special assistant to Mr. Manganiello, Greg Baldwin.
Yeah.
Which when now you guys, whoever hears this, you guys are in the know. It's actually meth coach.
Meth coach, which is absolutely genius.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's just an amazing story. So, I mean, the way you've taken all the pain and suffering and what we've all been through and turned it into comedy, because a lot of comedy comes out of pain anyway, doesn't it? Just feeling, I mean, just all kinds of things that happened in your life. But I love that. And you're killing it out there. You've helped so many people. I've witnessed that, you know what I mean? Which I love and you continue to do. And I think that's the thing that is so special, is being of service, And that's what I love about doing this podcast, because for me, I do this because I want to let people know what other people like myself have gone through. And I don't take a cent for this, of course. I'm not involved with that. This is service because I just love to be able to do it.
Yeah.
And share my journey with people and your journey, which is so cool.
It's crazy because, you would think it's a bad thing to be a drug addict, right? But it turns out it was the best thing that ever happened to me, because it gave me this incredible, wonderful life. And, we learn from our struggles in lives. And a lot of people, we all have our problems that we have to deal with. But drug addiction actually led me to spirituality and a life of service, And it's like, I always thought it was a curse to be a drug addict, alcoholic, but it turns out it was a gift because it's given me so much. But it's tough. It's not easy. Being sober is not—it's not easy, man. We don't have alcohol or drugs to numb the pain anymore, which we did all our lives. So we have to actually mature like normal people do and walk through experiences and grief and loss and stuff, and we mature from it. But It's an incredible, wonderful life. You know, people say, would you change anything? Of course I would.
Yeah,
you
I know? Mean, I love it. I think I might have mentioned this before, but I think I was watching Dennis Miller or somebody who said, that guy who says he has no regrets, yeah, I'd like to meet him.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, come on.
Of course.
We all got regrets. I don't, you know, I just, when people say that, I'm like, you know, I don't know.
We have regrets. I've made a lot of mistakes.
Oh, man. So have I. I mean, you know? Certainly. I mean, there are certain things I know that I live in today, and I have no idea what tomorrow will bring.
Yeah.
I can't do anything about the past, but I'm grateful to be here today. So I've decided to, you know, the only thing I can control is how I react to everything that happens around me.
Yeah.
And the kind of person that we are, you know what I mean?
Yeah. But, I've had so many spiritual awakenings or moments of clarity, you know, and I meditate 20 minutes twice a day. And, you know, I've spoken in jails, you know, at least 300 times. I got really actively involved in bringing recovery to inmates, you know.
Which I think it's so great you did. It's called, you know, it's hospitals and institutions.
Yeah, H&I. And I just, you know, that's just my thing. I just, you know, I love going into the jails. I used to watch, like, you know, before I got sober, Locked Up and all those shows. I used to be fascinated by the jails. And I don't know why I had such a fascination with them, but it turns out I probably know why now. It's because a large portion of my life would be spent trying to help the inmates. But I met this kid in there, and I talked to him like 3 months in a row. He was incarcerated once a month, and I would go into this pod. And he says to me, I'm getting out on Friday. What should I do? And I said, well, come meet me at this recovery meeting. I'll introduce you to some people. We'll get you started, you know? And I went to the meeting. He didn't show up. And about, I don't know, 4 months later, I was at the meeting, and I see this kid like staring at me. I didn't recognize him. And he like runs over to me, and he's like, hey, do you remember me? And I'm like, no. And he's like, from jail. And I'm like, oh, dude, what's up, man?
Right, yeah.
And he goes, hey, Mikos, I got out. He goes, I started drinking again. And I hit another bottom, and he goes, I came to this meeting looking for you. You weren't here, but I raised my hand as a newcomer. And he goes, all these people surrounded me. And he goes, they got me into a sober living. He's like, I'm sober 3 months.
That's so great.
And I'm like, that's incredible. And a year after that, I'm at a recovery meeting, and he's the speaker. And he shared the story how he was introduced to recovery while he was incarcerated, and he said, there was one person that came in to talk to me that saved my life, and he looked at me and he smiled. And listen, I'm not God. I didn't save anybody's life. I just happened to be the hand of recovery that was there for him at the time. Life is really about service, you know? And what a gift that this recovery has given me. It's given me the opportunity to help other people. And he's still clean and sober. I think he's 12. He's probably like 12 years clean and sober.
That's phenomenal. And, you know? And see the way you change the life, you know, save a life, Greg. And that's what the beauty is. I mean, it's really all about the people that are in recovery.
Our friendship came from it. I wouldn't be sitting here with you right now if we weren't both clean and
sober. And we've done so many cool things together.
Yeah.
And I've heard some great wisdom come. I've had some of the funniest stuff come out of your mouth, because obviously, but I've also heard some of the greatest wisdom come out of your mouth. There's a certain wisdom that comes with, I think, time in recovery. At least you hope so. And you definitely have it, Greg, because...
Thank you.
You know, I've talked to you about things, you know, sometimes when they're bothering me. And one of the things that's interesting was I got this email. There's big storms in the New York area, New York and New Jersey. And I have a storage unit or two there. Yeah, I have a couple, to be honest with you. And the one, the company reached out to me in an email and said, we think that some of your belongings were probably damaged in the flooding. You have to come and look at this within the next 5 days. You know, I live on the West Coast, or we're going to go in there ourselves and throw out whatever's destroyed. And then that was on a Friday night. So like, there's nobody there to answer the phone. You know what I mean? So you're stressing, you know what I mean? You're like, oh, what's going on? And then you and I were headed to a meeting together the next evening.
Yeah.
Right. Or a couple days later. And I hadn't spoken to them yet or heard from them. And I said to you, yeah, man, I can't believe, I think a bunch of my personal belongings were destroyed in this flood. And you go to me, you know, if you never see that stuff again, your life isn't going to be any different. And you were so right. Because, I mean, it's stuff sitting in storage anyway.
Yeah.
So that, you know what I took away from that, which was a great thing? I have been downsizing my personal belongings that are there when I'm back in New Jersey. And, you know, and I've been like, you know, there's records that I really believed that needed to be, somebody else needs to enjoy. So I've taken them to other used record stores to help out bricks and mortar record stores, you know, and sold them stuff, you know, whatever, you know, and so that they could, someone else could enjoy it. It doesn't need to be sitting in a box. But the crazy thing was, I finally heard from them. And I mean, when you said that to me about how it was going to change my life, it gave me a whole new perspective. Mm. I had a freedom from like being worried about these belongings, being a prisoner of my belongings from the past. Yeah. You know, it's only material things. So at the end of the day, I eventually get another letter from them that says, we don't think yours was as damaged as some of the other ones. Mm. And then I send my friend up there from New Jersey. I send a letter so they can cut the locks and, you know, put a new lock on there. And he opens the door and goes, there's no damage at all. None of your stuff has been damaged. And I'm like, but it did. You know what? You started me thinking that, you know, it was time to literally purge in a sense that of things that aren't necessary. I don't need the heavy weight of those things. And things that were, I went through everything, and the things that were really dear and near and dear to my heart, I held on to. I'm still going through them. But like, I got rid of a lot of stuff because, you know, I'm not a young man, and I'm, what do I need all this for? I don't need all that excess.
The memories that you have and all the things that you have done in this life. I mean, you have lived such an incredible life and so many experiences, and you've touched so many people's lives. I watched the video recently of you at the festival with Dave Grohl, wishing you a happy birthday, dedicating, was it My Hero to you for your birthday? And it's like, so many, you know, lives have been touched by you because even, you know, even when you were drinking and using, you know, then things were going, you wouldn't be here alive today if you didn't get sober, and either would I, but it's just, you know, and I've gotten to know you so well, and it's like, you're so positive. You always have such a positive attitude, and I'm a very positive guy too, but you know, it's like, man, I could get real down and depressed sometimes, but whenever I do and I have a conversation with you, you always put such a good perspective in things and help cheer me up. And man, I'm just so grateful for our friendship.
Yeah, and so am I, Greg. I thank you for saying that because you've been there for me. I just explained how much, you know, that's the kind of friendships and relationships you get in recovery. I mean, you know, it's like any other organization or anything else in life. There's people that you're going to really gel with. There's people you're not. There's people you're going to like, people you're not, maybe not necessarily be that fond of. But at the same time, you can make some of the greatest relationships of your life if you're living the right way and you've decided to make that decision to live by the recovery and the steps and the program. It's great.
It's I mean, listen, life's hard, man. You know, it's where I'm at now. It's like, you know, they say, I don't know who they are, but, you know, the road gets narrower. And what that means for me is that I can't get away with a lot of the old behaviors and I have to grow. And I have to become a better person and I have to make changes and, you know, and, but, you know, sometimes I have depression, you know, and it's like before when I get depressed, I would just get high or drink and it would go away and then it'd be worse the next day, but then I'd just drink and use again. And now, you know, I don't have that option anymore. So it could get hard, man. The depression sometimes could be real. And you know, I'm reading this book, it's called Buddha's Brain right now. And I'm really trying to evolve and to change the, you know, my thinking where instead of, you know, I'll give you an analogy. It's like I'll do a comedy show, right? And, you know, there's 300 people, right? And everybody's laughing, but there's one table in the front with like 6 or 7 people and they're not laughing and they're not smiling. And then my whole focus comes on that one table, that negative table. And then after the show, I'm like, I'm like, that was a terrible show. And everybody's like, what are you talking about? The place was, they loved it. But my mind has the tendency to go to that negative thing. Even all these positive things are happening in my life. And, you know, I want to try to learn how to have more joy and happiness by trying to be able to focus and stay present and focus on the positive things. And, you know, it's a challenge, you know. And I think I probably suffer from periodic depression. But, you know, I started meditation. I do a form of meditation called transcendental meditation. And it really, really changed my life, you know. And I sit 20 minutes twice a day and I meditate. And I have a pretty remarkable story about it. The day that I learned meditation, we get a mantra. Basically, the mantra is so you learn how to be quiet and just sit still. And but I got the day I got my mantra, I was at my house and my friend was at my place and we made Sam a dinner. We both learned TM together. And anyway, he asked me to give him a ride home to his car. And it was like 2 blocks away. I'm like, what? And I'm like, but I said yes, right? So I give him a ride to his car. He gets out. We get out of the car. We hear this woman screaming, right? Ah, don't die. Don't die. I'm like, what is that? And he's like, over there. And I run over there and I look and there's this tall guy hunkered over. And I'm like, oh shit, OD, right? OD. And so I call 911 and they said, is he breathing, right? So I check, he's breathing. He has a pulse, a very light pulse. And they said, you got to pull him out of the car and lay him down. So I pull him out of the car and lay him down and he flatlines. There's no pulse. He's not breathing anymore. And they're like, you got to do CPR on him. So I start doing CPR on him for about 3 or 4 minutes until the paramedic comes. And they gave him a Narcan shot and he survived. And I'm like in shock. And I go to the girlfriend and I said, you know, I'm sober 11 years. It was at the time. And she goes, oh my God, do you know this guy? And she said his name. And I said, yeah. And she goes, you just saved his brother's life. And I'm like, oh my God. And I know the guy's brother. And it turns out it was somebody I know. And but that day that I learned meditation, that happened. And for me, coincidence or miracle, I look at it as a miracle. Like, you know, I was open to the universe and God put me, or, you know, God or higher power or whatever, put me in a situation where I can help somebody. And that's what I try to do now, is I try to learn how to be more conscious so I can see the little miracles and, you know, and become the best version of myself and see where I can be and where I need to go to be the of maximum service to life, you know, to the world. But
yeah. And you've done it. You do such a great job of it, Greg. And I appreciate that so much. I've got to say that, you know, that's an incredible story.
Yeah.
It's always when you do things that are just selfless for others, I think a lot of good things come back to you. Either way, being of service is everything.
I saw that guy. So I was at a recovery meeting at the Comedy Store. I walk up and there he is with his brother that I know. And his brother's like, that's him. That's the dude. This is the dude that saved your life. Right? And I walk up and he's like, oh, and he like cowered down and like said, thank you, man. And he didn't, I know, I'm like, oh, you know, I was like, well, he's not very grateful, but I know he was embarrassed. Right. Yeah. So we do this recovery meeting. I end up sitting, holding his hand. We do the serenity prayer at the end. And then we just like hugged and started crying.
Yeah.
And I heard he ended up going back out, but I heard he's clean again. And I just, last I heard, this is like 5-6 years ago, but I just heard like 3 months ago, he's back in recovery, but man, you know, just, God.
That's an amazing story. What an incredible story. And you just happen to be there and you helped out again. And that's you, and you have a history of doing that. And I think it's great. It means so much. And, you know, I'm really happy that things you're on tour a lot. I mean, you're out on the road quite a bit, which I think is so great. But let's talk about your Second Chances podcast that you've had going.
So I started this podcast with a comedian named Ant, who was judge. He was on Last Comic Standing a lot. We started it, and the way we started it was because we wanted to bring hope and inspiration to the world and have positive messages. And so I've had on, God, I mean, from comedians, Margaret Cho and Carney Wilson Phillips, and she was telling the story about, you know, her dad, Brian Wilson of the Beach Boys, you know, trying to give her heroin when she was a kid. And I've had on people with autism. I've had on a parent of someone with autism. I've had cancer, you know, somebody that's going through chemo with cancer. Just all these different stories of, and, you know, it's been amazing. We stopped doing it during the pandemic. I'm going to restart it probably in the next month. But I don't know. I think we have like 100-something episodes. You can find it on secondchances.tv is the website. But it's just, you know, I want to make a difference in the world, you know, and I want to be, you know, bring hope and inspiration. That's why, you know, we're coming back to the Ted Lasso. I love that show so much because of the positivity of that show and the positive messaging. And that's what I want to do. And now it's really cool that I'm a stand-up comedian. And my career, my job is to go out and bring happiness and joy to people and laughter and allow people to forget their days, you know, and their struggles. And, It's a trip, man. And I just love doing comedy so much. And the podcast is just amazing. And I'm so grateful, man. Life is hard. It's fun. It's great. It's miserable. It's everything. And now without drugs and alcohol, I experience it. You know, I experience all of it, the good and the bad.
Yeah, and I think that's the important thing. It's, you know, you said it earlier, you know, and that was part of my thing. I mean, I first originally got into drugs and alcohol because it made me feel good, mm-hmm. feel different, and then started using them to cope with other life events.
Yeah.
And it just stopped working for me like it, you know, like it did for you. But life is an incredible gift, and I'm so grateful to be here every day, and I know you are as well.
It's a miracle,
like I said,
man.
Even on the tough days, it's so much better to wake up with clarity. I'm so grateful every day. Prayer is a part of my life, and just being a, you know, being alive, being there. I've been very blessed, and I'm grateful to be here. Greg, I think this is awesome. How do people follow you on socials?
So on social media, one thing I want to say, if you're going through a hard time, you know, with drugs and alcohol, or you're going through depression, there's help available. You know, there's help available, and you can recover from it. You can get through what you're going through, and it's, you know, unfortunately, we have to go through difficult things in life, but we become better people because of it. But I'm always available, and if you want to reach out to me, and if I could do anything to be of service for you, you can follow me. You can reach me at two places. One on Instagram @RealGregBaldwin. @RealGregBaldwin and TikTok, I'm @RealGregBaldwin. Those would be the two best places. If you send me a message, I'll respond to you. And, you know, it's just incredible, man. I love you so much, Matt.
I love you, Greg. You're my brother, man.
Brothers for life.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's, and I'm very grateful for this. And we've been on this journey since before I really got sober. And I'm really glad, you know, you're part of this recovery journey and life journey for me. It's amazing. It's been great.
So it's incredible.
We'll keep it going as long as we are blessed to do so, you know.
Yeah. And we're living our best lives, man, and we're being a service to others.
That's the most important thing, you know. Yeah. It's great. Thank you so much, Greg, for doing this today. It was so great to have you on.
It's been a blast. I love you, Matt.
Yeah, I love you too, Greg. That's Greg Baldwin. Make sure if he comes through your city, you go see him do his comedy. And keep an eye. Like I said, go to The Real Greg Baldwin. Or I'm sorry, Real Greg Baldwin on Instagram, or you can follow him on TikTok, and you can find out where he's in your area performing as well, and everything up to date on what he's doing.
And that's, my website is realgregbaldwin.com.
Greg, thanks so much for doing this. This is Sound Sobriety and Success. I hope you liked the episode that I did here with Greg. It's so great to have him on. If you liked it, make sure you hit like, and please also subscribe and follow us. Thanks so much for listening to the podcast. And remember, you are not alone. And I'll be back with you soon. If you or someone you know is struggling with alcoholism or addiction, Music Cares operates a mental health and addiction recovery program that understands the challenges music professionals face, no matter where they are in their career. Learn more, including if you're eligible, at musiccares.org. That's musiccares.org.
Sound, Sobriety, and Success with Matt Pinfield. Produced by Jake Urbanek. Engineered by Darren Silva. Jerry Onsaldo, Booking. Bill Royal, Research. Susan Aksu, Marketing Production Assistant. And Laura Keeney, Marketing. Sound, Sobriety, and Success is a Bennstown McVeigh podcast production.